which brings us to our reading of Anti-Systemic Movements, continuing chapter 2, Dilemmas of Anti-Systemic Movements. My contextualizing here, last week we said, and today we reiterate, that we need a different standard for success. We need our own vision and guideposts to mark our progress to it, not a reframed, repackaged state. Even if they change the name, the state, to regional administration. Today we've been arguing again a question that needs much discussion and so is reiterated often here, that we are lured to make this mistake about fixing the state in the absence of our clarity about the nature of the state, and that it is only this clarity that will allow us to move forward to begin designing the necessary alternative people's vision of a new global social arrangement, continuing with Dilemmas of Anti-Systemic Movements. As for the increasing efficacy of direct forms of action, the tendency concerns mainly the labor movement and was rooted in the joint impact of two key trends of the world economy. The trend toward an increasing commodification of labor power, my comment, we're going to be skipping a little bit ahead in a second. So as a brief fill-in, let me say that what they're referring to is the ferocity with which power goes after the earth connected. They use the word peasantry, a tendency that has continued without cessation since it began. We see it today in more instances than we can name, but certainly, notably, it flails Nigerians, Syrians, Tunisians, the Mexican indigenous. Everywhere there still exists an earth connection, we see violence, the worst violence, the most dispiriting violence. This tendency, the commodification of human energy, we see it used against them. And using our Earth Alliance lens, we can now see it for what it is, Plato's tribe's attempt to eliminate all competition for our allegiance. Continuing. As for the increasing efficacy of direct forms of action, the tendency concerns mainly the labor movement and was rooted in the joint impact of two key trends of the world economy, the trend toward an increasing commodification of labor power and the trend toward increasing division of labor and mechanization. By the 1960s, radical changes had occurred from both points of view in core regions and in many semi-peripheral countries. Moreover, the increased commodification of labor had depleted the locally available strata of peasants that could be effectively and competitively mobilized to undermine the political and economic power of labor. And I'm going to interject with another quote. These are the same tendencies described slightly differently that Emmanuel Wallerstein discusses in his chapter in Does Capitalism Have a Future? In a section titled Long-Term Structural Trends, he describes these tendencies as follows. Quote, how does one accumulate capital endlessly in a capitalist system? The basic method, albeit not the only one, is via production, in which the entrepreneur producer retains the differential between what it costs to produce the commodity and the price at which the producer can sell it. The lower the costs and the higher the sales price, the more profit is realized and can then be reinvested. But how can the differential between costs and sales price be maximized? There are two necessary elements in this exercise. To maximize sales price, there must be a quasi-monopoly, a subject we've treated already. It is how one, in addition, minimizes costs that we must now discuss. We start with the reality that there are always three generic costs in any production process: personnel, inputs, and taxation. Personnel costs, the costs of inputs, and taxation. There are three different levels of personnel for whom the producer owner has to pay. the unskilled and semi-skilled workforce, the skilled workers and supervisory cadres, and the top managers. The costs of the least skilled workforce tend to go up in A phases, expansions, as they collectively make demands on the employer in one form or another of syndical action. Employers during the A phases may make concessions to the least skilled personnel because avoiding shutdowns or slowdowns may be less costly than wage increases. However, eventually these costs become too high for the employers, particularly for those in the leading industries. And my interjection by these leading means that, you know, they're at, it's like think sharks in a feeding frenzy. What's being unfortunately implied here is the, I believe, propagandistic notion of differential skill explaining differential pay. That the created concept, low skill, the notion that an assignment to a low slot by the world economy, the market, implying that that's legitimate. And this is upside down in my view. Those so assigned to these low slots are paid less because they hold the system on their backs. They run it. They run the system. Though this service be uncredited, they are paid less so that more can be extracted from them, so that more can be done on their dime, on top of them, with their energy as fuel. Again, this is betrayal insinuated into our mutual relations. The Divide Mental Manual provides service to the class system that is both ideological and material. Continuing, the solution for employers has historically been the runaway factory, that is, relocation to historically, quote unquote, lower wage areas during the B period, contractions. There, the workers are recruited from loci, usually rural, in which their real income is even lower than that offered by the newly installed, usually urban, production site. It seems to be a win-win situation for the worker and the employer. After some time, however, the transplanted workers feel more knowledgeable about their new situation and more aware of the low level of their wages in worldwide terms. They begin to engage in some syndical action. And sooner or later, the employer finds that as a result, the costs, again, have become too high. The solution is still another move. The moves are costly but effective. Worldwide, however, there is a ratchet effect. The reductions never eliminate totally the increases. Over 500 years, this repeated process has virtually eliminated the loci into which to move. This can be measured by the degree of de-ruralization of the world system, which has risen spectacularly in the last 50 years and seems to be proceeding apace.